From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, we'll bring you the results of the primary races across New York. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on who and what the primary winners face in the general election. And state union leaders condemn the U.S. Supreme Court decision upholding the right of workers not to pay union dues. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Primaries were held this week across New York, and a major upset in the 14th District. U.S. Representative Joseph Crowley was defeated by a 28-year-old challenger in the Democratic congressional primary in New York. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a political novice running on a low budget and liberal platform, won a surprise victory in a district that includes parts of the Bronx and Queens. Crowley had been considered a candidate to become the next House Speaker if Democrats win the majority. Meanwhile, in the 19th District of New York, Antonio Delgado claimed victory in the Democratic primary. He will face freshman incumbent Republican John Faso in November. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn was there and filed this report from Kingston.
Delgado received about 22% of the vote in the 11-county swing district.
This is it. It's about you. It's about the people. It's about being out there every day on the front lines. From here until November.
Delgado of Rhinebeck delivered a victory speech at Rough Draft Bar and Books in Kingston. Ulster County resident Gareth Rhodes came in second with some 18% of the vote, followed closely by Kingston resident Pat Ryan. Delgado thanked Rhodes, Ryan, and the other Democratic contenders, Greene County resident Brian Flynn, Dave Clegg, and Jeff Beals, both of Woodstock, and Aaron Collier of Cooperstown. And he thanked his supporters.
I want us to believe in our power. Believe in our power.
Yeah.
Okay? And we will see this thing through. I love you.
Delgado also acknowledged the support of Citizen Action of New York, where Quentin Cross is lead organizer for the Hudson Valley.
Antonio Delgado is the best person to carry our message of social, racial, economic, and environmental justice. He is the voice of those who are voiceless, the affected communities that we try to build up here at Citizen Action.
And Delgado expressed appreciation for endorsements from Eileen and Michelle Hinchey, wife and daughter of the late Congressman Maurice Hinchey, and Dan Ahouse, Hinchey's former chief of staff.
And I could not think of a better example, a better legacy to attempt with every bit of fiber in my bones to carry on. Could not think of one. So I'm humbled and honored, and thank you to the Hinchey family for that support.
In 2017, Catskill resident Andrea Mitchell attended a rally and told Congressman Faso she was concerned about losing health insurance given her pre-existing conditions. Faso gave her a hug and assurances that such would not be the case, and it was caught on video. The exchange thrust Mitchell into the national media spotlight. Faso voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Now Mitchell appears in an ad for Delgado and cheered for his victory Tuesday.
I think that Antonio has such a comprehensive plan that will get us universal health care now. I think that Medicaid for All is a plan that has to wait. I don't think it's going to pass under Trump. And as a woman with disabilities, I can't wait on that. I need someone with a plan today.
Delgado talks about what is at the top of his platform.
Healthcare, absolutely. Universal, affordable healthcare. I'd also argue for infrastructure. We need infrastructure here. Roads, rail, broadband access, cell service. And not far behind that, you got education, you got environment. Those are the areas that I'm focused on.
In a statement, Faso congratulated Delgado, and says voters will have a crystal clear choice in November. Faso also took aim at Delgado's having moved to the district last year, saying, quote, he will soon learn, as the last two Democratic candidates for Congress before him, that our neighbors do not look kindly upon candidates who have just moved into our district and presume to represent us, end quote. Faso won the seat in 2016 over Democrat Zephyr Teachout by about 25,000 votes of more than 307,000 cast, around an 8-point spread. Meantime, Green Party candidate Steve Greenfield also congratulated Delgado, but said, quote, in all ways, the Delgado victory illustrates the vacating of Democratic Party responsibility for offering experienced, locally sourced, politically progressive candidates to voters in New York's 19th district.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Now to New York's 21st Congressional District, where Democrat Tedra Cobb easily won the 5-person primary in the 12-county region Tuesday and will challenge 2-term incumbent Republican Elise Stefanik. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has reaction from the candidates.
Former St. Lawrence County legislator Tedra Cobb of Canton won 11 of the 12 counties in northern New York's sprawling 21st Congressional District. Cobb attributes her victory to strong organization with 900 volunteers and a base of donors she says will be a strong foundation for the general election. Cobb also plans to stay on message as she challenges incumbent Elise Stefanik.
I am going to stay on message that we need health care. We need to reduce the cost of prescription drugs. We need to ensure that everyone in this district has access to health care, that businesses can survive and thrive. Those are the messages that I will talk about and focus on because we're in trouble here, and we need a representative who's serving us. That is important, and that's what I'm going to talk about. And that's, at the end of the day, that's why people chose me as the candidate, and that's why I think they'll choose me in November.
Although overall turnout was generally low, Saranac Lake's Dylan Radigan, who won in Herkimer County, says he was encouraged by the size of the turnout.
When you look at the midterm primary, in 2014, it's almost a doubling of the participation. So I think it's an incredible sign for the level of engagement, and I think it's a level of engagement that will carry through the entire year politically. So I'm really, obviously, pleased by that and duly impressed by the size of Tedra Cobb's victory. I fully congratulate her and wish her the best in the general.
Emily Martz has been emphasizing the need for the candidates and the party to come together and says what matters now is that the candidates unify around the nominee. She expects all the candidates and volunteers will now work to that end.
To get the North Country new representation, better representation, we need to, of course, have all Democrats turn out to vote. People want to be a part of positive change. People want to be a part of a movement. That's why so many people loved Bernie. He gave them hope. And in order to be able to carry that sort of a message, people have to be unified. The party has to be unified. And I know it was really important that that display begin immediately.
The losing candidates say they do plan to back Cobb. During her concession speech, Keene businesswoman Katie Wilson told her supporters it is crucial to support Cobb and get a Democrat in the seat.
We gambled, we rolled the dice. It didn't play out. You know, we didn't come out on top. But right now, what everyone has to do is work like hell to make sure that Tedra Cobb is our next congresswoman. This moment is about making sure someone like Stefanik, who has no idea what it's like to live here, does not find a third term. So don't be jaded and rally behind the winner because she earned it.
Patrick Nelson was the first to enter the race. And while disappointed, he's also proud of his campaign's efforts.
We ran one of the most efficient campaigns in the district, focusing on grassroots small dollar contributions. And, you know, we got the message out there. You know, it didn't resonate as much as we wanted to, and I commend the Cobb team because that was definitely a team effort over there of all of those 800 volunteers that went out, and I they knocked on doors, they made phone calls, they sent postcards, they got the vote out, and that's what you have to do to win an election like this.
A release from Stefanik's campaign welcomed Cobb to the general election and anticipated a spirited campaign. But it went on to say, quote, "Our opponent emerges from a weak, divisive Democratic primary as the out-of-touch, liberal, hyperpartisan tax-and-spend candidate of the general election," unquote. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Now to the rest of the primaries in New York State. In the 11th District, GOP Representative Dan Donovan survived the challenge from former Representative Michael Grimm, who was seeking to make a comeback after serving prison time. Donovan is New York City's only Republican and is seeking a third term. Perry Gershon has defeated four other Democratic candidates for the right to face Republican U.S. Representative Lee Zeldin in the November 6th general election. The commercial real estate lender will face Zeldin in New York's 1st Congressional District, which covers most of central and eastern Suffolk County on Long Island. In New York's 9th Congressional District, U.S. Representative Yvette Clark narrowly survived a Democratic primary challenge from 30-year-old Adam Bunkadeko. In the 16th House District, 15-term Democrat Elliot Engel cruised to a primary victory late Tuesday. To the 12th House District, where 13-term Democrat Carolyn Maloney turned away challenger Suraj Patel. In the 25th District, Joe Morelli, State Assemblyman, won the Democratic primary in the race to replace the late Representative Louise Slaughter. And in the 24th District, Dana Bolter defeated Juanita Perez-Williams in the Democratic primary for the right to face Republican Representative John Katko. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, the ripple effect has begun after the upset victory of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez over Representative Joe Crowley in New York's 14th Congressional District, not only on the federal level, Alan, but in New York State. Now a spate of articles and discussion and analysis on the New York governor's race coming up. And, of course, Governor Cuomo faces Cynthia Nixon in the Democratic primary, and he's saying that this race is apples and oranges, even though a social Democrat won, and it looks like the outsider candidates are gaining favor.
Well, David, we do know that the polls were really wrong where Crowley gets ousted by a novice. The reason is that there is a printed report that he was 35% ahead of her, and she wins by an overwhelming margin. Now, if the polls can be that wrong in one case, Nixon's argument is, hey, that could be the same thing in a gubernatorial race in which I'm supposedly trailing. But, you know, this is a race among Democrats, and Democrats seem to be shifting left. If the Democrats play it right, they will have a shot in this primary. Nevertheless, so far, I would say he's way out in front and will probably win.
Of course, the major race in New York, the 14th District we just spoke about, but then there was the 19th Congressional District, right now held by Republican John Faso. Antonio Delgado claimed victory this week in that Democratic primary. Of course, a very closely watched race as well, in a very interesting district.
Well, it's going to be a fight to the finish, obviously. We know that Faso is extremely articulate. He has proven that in the past. He consents to debates, and he does very well in them. Delgado, well, what kind of words can we use about him, except that he's got a tremendous background? We're talking about Harvard, we're talking about Rhodes, we're talking about all of the kinds of things that make a candidate an attractive candidate. Now, there are those who have said that Delgado is a guy who won't play well in the district. You never know. People want somebody who will make a difference. And if there's one thing that you know about a guy like Delgado is that he's smart enough and progressive enough to make that kind of a difference. It all depends on who shows up in these elections. Turnout is going to be the whole question. you know, there are as many Democrats, and maybe a few more, than there are Republicans, but Democrats don't tend to vote in the same numbers as Republicans do. I've always felt that that was the Republicans protecting what they have. They have a little bit more, they exercise the franchise, and they go out and they vote. So if people don't vote in this election, either by going to the ballot box or with their feet or by sitting down, that will determine who wins this election.
Now to New York's 21st congressional district race, Alan, where Tedra Cobb handily won the five-way Democratic primary to challenge Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. That North Country district, certainly up there, a different type of district than the one just described in the 19th.
The 19th is very, very competitive. This district is a Republican district, although Bill Owens, who's been on our air many times, is a blue dog Democrat, and he won that district, and he won it a couple of times, no question. So I'm simply saying anything could happen. We see that in these volatile times. But I think the 21st is a lot safer for Stefanik than you might imagine if you were a hopeful Democrat. But as I say, these are very different times. The idea that abortion may well be outlawed by the Supreme Court, as well as other issues that are dear to many people in this country, including a lot of independents, could mean you have an upset there too, David.
Now, let's go on to the issue of splitting up immigrants in New York. We see that those families have been arriving, and we're learning more and more where they're arriving and what's been happening. The governor this week signed legislation giving them benefits, including legal benefits and others, to protect them. But there seems to be a split in this country over what to do with immigrants.
Well, David, you're quite right. There is no state like New York when it comes to a symbol of welcoming immigrants. On our wall here in Great Barrington, where I live, my kids brought me the picture of the steamship that brought my father and his mother to this country. New York is the melting pot. It's what it's always been called. And when politicians see this, there's no question that they're going to have to honor immigrants. We see the mayor of Albany has named her city a sanctuary city and gotten a certain amount of hell from you-know-who for that. We do see that New York State is a progressive state, and the idea that you would ship people here and not tell a governor or a mayor de Blasio that those people were showing up turns out to be a bit of a national disgrace. It is a symbol of what the President of the United States does as he turns American against American. And yet, the people who do the jobs, the people who do the work, the people who make us a vibrant society are, in fact, immigrants. It's always been that way. And so it's this other baiting that goes on in this country that is so insidious and so disgraceful when it gets to the bad part of people's souls. It's what tyrants have always done and which they continue to do.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York's union leaders are condemning the U.S. Supreme Court decision this week, which upheld the right of workers not to pay union dues. But as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports,
the court, in a 5-4 ruling, agreed with Illinois state worker Mark Janis that his First Amendment rights were violated when he was compelled to have $45 a month deducted from his paycheck by his union for collective bargaining, even though Janis did not want to be part of the union. Union leaders in New York condemned the decision, as did many Democratic political leaders. The Public Employees Federation, the largest state worker union, says the lawsuit was backed by anti-worker extremists who are trying to rig the economy. Business groups, though, applauded. The state's business council called it a welcome victory for employee choice and freedom of speech. New York State United Teachers Union President Andy Pallotta says he thinks the ruling galvanizes the union movement, and he says unions, including his, are fighting back. Pallotta says they anticipated the Supreme Court, with its current political configuration, would rule against them in the case, and he says union officials have been reaching out to membership to remind them of the value of the organization.
We've reconnected with our members throughout the state, knocked doors, had conversations in schools and in hospitals where they work to make sure that they knew what the union does for them and what we can do for them.
In New York, Governor Cuomo and the legislature passed a law in March to help mitigate the expected effects from the Janus decision. The new rules make it easier for unions to recruit potential members when the state, municipality, or school district hires a new employee. They can also tighten the time period allowed for someone to opt out of the union. NYSUT's Pallotta says while unions must allow non-union members to benefit from any raises or health or pension benefits gained through a union contract with employers, they can now withhold other perks like special deals on life insurance or even free legal services.
Someone who needs an attorney, NYSUT would no longer provide that attorney. And a lot of times people need an attorney and they go looking for one, they're going to have to go outside the organization to get one. A very disturbing experience for someone.
Ken Jardin with the fiscal watchdog group, the Empire Center, says the new state law is a favor to the union leaders and bad public policy. But he says unions in New York still stand to lose significant revenue and possibly political clout from the ruling. He says when the state of Michigan recently changed its laws and stopped compelling public workers to pay for union activities, 20% opted out.
There are 1 million people who have signed membership cards in New York who are paying dues consensually, but they sign those membership cards thinking they are going to have to pay regardless. And as we saw in Michigan, after people were given the right to choose, about 1 in 5 teachers chose to leave the union.
But Jardin says the Supreme Court ruling could also strengthen unions and their core mission because now they will be forced to compete and will have to sell their product.
Every dollar they collect now is going to be paid consensually. It means people are going to have a right to choose. At the end of the day, it's in the union's own interest that they start treating these people more like customers and less like captive payers.
Pallotta with the teachers union says he does not expect there will be a sizable drop in his union's membership numbers. Later in the day, Cuomo took another step that he said will protect unions. He signed an executive order that will shield the personal details of state workers, like their addresses and phone numbers, from the Freedom of Information law so that anti-union forces cannot access the workers. Those details, though, are not commonly released on FOIL forms anyway. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1826 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gastina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.